This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are going to discuss imprisonment in America. We've had the subject discussed several times before, but this time it's going to get a whole lot more personal. Our guests are Sue Ellen Allen and Joe Cipetta. Both have unique perspectives. Both have experienced the prison issues from the inside and not in a good way. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't want to dwell on it, but I know that unless we get your kind of personal story, how'd you end up in prison, unless people know that, they're going to be thinking of nothing else the whole time they're listening. So,
you know, isn't that funny? People ask me that. And
they got to know that, and then they can move on to other stuff.
But if they're nice, I'll tell them. If they're rude, I'll say, oh, I was a serial killer.
Yeah.
And they just go, oh, my gosh. And I say,
For the record, you were not a serial killer?
I was not. I killed a lot of Cheerios and Raisin Bran. Yeah. But no, I was there for securities fraud.
Okay. And Joe?
Forgery and fraud.
Okay. And both, both kind of white collar financial crimes.
Which doesn't make a difference in Arizona. You're mixed. Everybody's mixed. Mm-hmm. There's no, people think that, oh, there's a white collar yard, but there's not.
Mm-hmm. True.
Mm-hmm. And you were both in, where were you?
Well, the only place women can be in Arizona is Perryville and Goodyear.
And that is, therefore, that is multi-level in terms
of... Multi-level. There's 7 yards, and it's multi-level. Right now, there are 4,200 women there.
They divide by maximum, minimum,
maximum,
whatever?
Medium, and minimum. There are 5 minimum yards, 2 medium, and 1 max.
For women. And you were in?
I was in a medium and a minimum.
Mm-hmm. Both. Start in the medium and then work as you're getting closer. Uh-huh. In your case, Joe?
I did the full tour. I started at the highest level yard in the state at Central Unit, level 5.
And that is where?
That's in Florence.
Okay.
And I finished in Florence at the lowest yard, Florence North Unit.
Okay.
One of the things that prisons like to do is move you because it's unsettling. And the feds like to move you from Florida to California so your family can't visit. But in Arizona, they'll move you from Yuma to Florence.
And if you have family, that's a big deal.
Very hard on you, yeah. But they just do it, and you never know why.
What are visiting rules in a state prison?
In Arizona, you can visit on Saturday and Sunday.
It's changed so much with this earned incentive program.
Oh, yeah.
Now they have visiting almost every night of the week, depending on where you are. They have night visits, weekend visits. They changed it at Perryville recently.
Visits are an earned status?
They are
based
now.
Based on behavior?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. At the very lowest level, if you haven't earned any incentives, it can be a 4-hour block of visitation on one weekend day. Mm-hmm. So a morning or afternoon on either Saturday or Sunday.
And it's also tied to your phone calls. Your visiting list is tied to your phone
calls.
Mm-hmm. You have to have approved. Your list has to be approved for you to call them.
And that is family members?
Well, it can be friends, too, but they have to be approved. And like my husband and I were co-defendants, so we got 2 15-minute phone calls a year, one in July and one in December. Mm-hmm. If you're a family member, you get, like if you have a child and you're in prison, your son is in prison and you're the dad or mom, you get 2 15-minute phone calls a year.
Used to be, I don't know if it's still the case, absolutely exorbitant rates that you paid for those calls.
They have gone down.
What were they and what are they?
They were like 15. They were like a dollar a minute, weren't they?
You could pay $15 to $18 for a 15-minute phone call. Yeah. Now they're less than a third of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. They've gone down.
Did you have to pay that with funds earned within the prison or could you bring in outside?
You had to call collect.
You did.
And, and
your family
and
friends.
That's a
family
burden.
It's a family burden.
Now they have both options. Yeah. You can have prepaid or... your family can still pay, but it's all prepaid now, which is what reduced the rates ultimately.
Mm-hmm. And what are you paying now?
Oh, gosh. It was a year and a half ago for me, and we were paying $1.90 for a 15-minute call if it was local.
Okay.
And under $4 anywhere else.
It's way higher than anybody else would pay, but it's
higher
not
than
as completely I mean, it was a profit center for the prisons, right?
It still is. Yeah. It still is because they get a kickback from whoever the server is. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's JPay, isn't it?
You know what?
I wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm. It changes so much. It was almost a running joke. You never knew who.
All the prisons have a kickback. It's not just Arizona.
It went to general prison funding, or did it go to programs, or what?
Well, they
haven't. That's a great question. I don't think there's
you
been
don't
an
know?
Audit.
There hasn't been an audit in years.
Typically, ISP, the inmate store proceeds, there's mm-hmm. programming funding. They're supposed to take a percentage mm-hmm. That the vendors kick back to DOC, and it's supposed to go into programs. Mm-hmm. And that would be the money. It used to be called the A&R Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And they would use it to buy recreational equipment and different things like that, programs. Education would tap into it for different programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to get each of you separately on the court. Tell me what being in prison is like.
I'd say it's all the D words. It's draconian. It's diminishing. It's demoralizing. It's humiliating. Staff will tell you, you're not here to be punished. Your punishment is separation from society. And then you are punished every day. In small...
Flesh that out. Yeah, tell us
how. Well, in small ways that you just can't, when you tell somebody, it sounds really stupid, but like you get a ticket for, like I had a friend who got a ticket, which is a disciplinary action, and it was Super Bowl weekend, and she wanted to see the Super Bowl, and she got a knock on the door, you got a ticket, turn in your electrical appliances. She didn't want to turn them in, and she knew she didn't have a ticket. She asked to see the sergeant, which was her right. She went up to see the sergeant. The sergeant grumbled. He looked on the computer. Sure enough, she didn't have a ticket. So he wrote her one for disobeying a direct order to turn in her stuff for the ticket mm-hmm. she didn't have. That's pretty standard. I got one for encouraging a friend to give two of my students Reader's Digest. And when it came, it says a gift from Sue Ellen Allen to Mary Jones. And so we both got tickets. And poor Mary didn't even know it was coming.
Because you weren't authorized to give it to her?
It's bartering and trading.
That's not allowed.
It's not allowed.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you said referenced electronic or electrical.
Yes.
What kind of things are you allowed to have?
You have a TV. They're very expensive and they're very small. Now they're flat screen and they're just really small.
You have to buy them.
Mm-hmm. Joe would know how much they are now. When I got mine, I'd been there 3 years with no TV. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, it changed my whole world. I was looking at the M&M commercials. Mm-hmm. I was so excited to see color. And you used to have a little stinger thing that you could heat water with. Did they still use the stinger?
They have the immersion heaters mm-hmm. on the microwave ovens are becoming more popular.
Yeah, that's a good thing, have a microwave.
In a place like Florence, is that over-the-air TV only?
The CCTV?
There's a contractor that provides X number of channels per policy, mm-hmm, and then there's a closed-circuit system that, in fact, the inmates help put together.
Joe had his own. Mm-hmm. Right. Joe ran that, didn't you?
I had the honor of working with Tony Crone, who evolved it into something really wonderful for the population. Yeah,
of course,
I helped
now
build
it's
it.
Not. That's mm-hmm. That's the problem with prison. You get something really good and then you leave and it dies.
Well, fortunately, we knew that was a problem. So it's been growing even after I left.
Good.
There are amazing people working with ETV. Yes.
Good.
ETV is?
Educational television.
Within the prison system?
And it's going statewide, mm-hmm, thanks to some real forward-thinking educators that have pushed it and IT people. Yes.
Uh-huh. That's great. We will return in just a moment with Sue Ellen Allen and Joe Chapata talking prisons in Arizona in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are talking prisons in Arizona. We have two former prisoners here, Joe Chapata and Sue Ellen Allen. Joe, we asked Sue Ellen a little bit about life in actual life in prison. What's your biggest recall? First of all, you were in for quite a while.
Yes, almost nearly 18 years, minus a few days.
And there were financial fraud. How much money was involved?
$17,000 and change, which I paid back. Prior to the sentencing.
$17,000. It's hard for me not to make a comparison. We've just had a presidential advisor convicted of something that involved multiple millions of dollars of tax fraud, amongst other things, and got
3 years.
3 years, and then four. And he's up to four and a half between multiple charges. But wow.
My family and friends would say that too, and then I would tell them, you know, I made some really bad decisions and I paid for them. One of them was being very arrogant about it in the court system, and that will get you nowhere.
Mm-mm.
Except 18 years.
That's what happened to Manafort, I think, too.
Arrogant how?
I felt that what I was doing didn't create victims, and I was very angry at the time. I was suffering from depression, mm-hmm. and I wasn't thinking rationally.
How old were you at the time of sentencing?
37. Mm-hmm.
And he'd been in Vietnam, too, so...
No, not no, me. That no. was Najee.
Oh, that's Najee. Oh, okay.
Najee's
You're not
our
old
Vietnam veteran.
You.
Oh, no, no. I'm all 56. Right.
But we're back to prison life. Give us a, you know,
okay.
a sense of feel.
Think of visiting an alien planet or a microcosm mm-hmm. or a parallel universe where everything works differently. Even the air is different. Up is down, left is right. It's truly strange. You think you're still in America on planet Earth, but you're really not. You're in the prison system, and the rules are completely different. It's subtle things. For instance, one of the first things I learned in prison was there was a 10-to-10 rule at the higher level yards, and it was one that was prosecuted by the inmates themselves.
And that means?
That means from 10 in the morning till 10 at night, you can yell, scream, talk, play chess, whatever you want to do. And when it's 10 o'clock at night until 10 in the morning, you can hear a pin drop like on the old Sprint commercials, and anyone that violates that is in big trouble. And even if you had to flush your toilets, you had to say the word water to warn people you were going to flush the toilet. And so my first night at the level 5 yard in the maximum security, I heard people saying water and flushing the toilet, and I had no idea what was going on. Precisely at 10 a.m., I heard 15 to 31, 16 to 85, or whatever the numbers were, these numbers, and I said, hey, they've got a code going on. I better learn this. They were playing chess because they were in cells isolated uh-huh. from each other, and they had chess boards with numbers, and they would move the pieces from one place to another and play chess. So I knew right then I was not in Kansas anymore.
I call it down the rabbit hole, prison wonderland, because it doesn't make sense.
Sue Ella, question for you. By the way, do you know we've met?
I thought so.
Yeah. Do you know where?
No.
I can tell you where.
Okay.
It was just a couple of weeks before you were indicted. I was running focus groups for the community colleges and the Arizona Business Gazette on
wow.
the topic of business ethics.
Oh, I was a part of – I remember
you were,
that.
You
yeah.
were. Mm-hmm. And I then remember reading about your indictment.
And you
well,
went,
life has its irony.
It does. That was a good group.
Yeah. The other things I remember, there were two people who I appreciated in that group for being especially candid. One was the inimitable Sam Steiger,
mm-hmm.
who was, and the other was Tony West, who had, we were talking, you have a group on business ethics, and you are, a group like that is prone to give you a lot of very high kind of high moral principle, you know, and everybody's super ethical and all that. And Tony, what I loved about him, he said, you know, we were talking about, you know, like, do you running a business or something, and you do better if you're ethical and all that. And he made a point. He said, I've been in three businesses. One is I've been a trial lawyer. Two is I've been a developer. Three, I've been a politician. He once ran for governor. And he said, in every one of those, you do much better if you can kind of make a one-time killing and then get out. You know, in contrast, there are other kinds of business. The prototype would be a grocery store. If a grocery store screws you, you're not coming back ever again, and it's stupid on the part. It's very easy for a grocer to be ethical because ethical grocery is very good business. You've got a choice of lots of stores, and you go back there every single week over and over. Contrast that with a car dealer, for example, where you buy one car and it might be 5 or 10 years, and there's other – you may not go back anyway. Mm. You can make a lot of money on one deal, and that's all you get. It may, in other words, the ethical profile is different, apart from the right or wrong of it. But there's an alignment for a grocer – or, for example, a minister, okay? A minister, right, if you're highly ethical and known to be highly ethical and principled, it's probably good for your career. And there are other businesses, he made the point, this is off topic a little bit, where if you shade things a little bit, again, Tony made the point, developer, trial lawyer, politician, one-time killing you can do well on.
I think that one of the things that hits an inmate when they go in is ethics, because – you have been painted in court as the darkest of dark or the lightest mm-hmm. of light. And then the judge puts his own paintbrush on mm-hmm. it. And you are judge. Then you get in and you feel like this miserable human being. And suddenly you have staff members who are lying to you. And you know they're lying. Or they're doing things that aren't quite right.
About what kinds of things?
Well, this was something that happened to me before. It was in jail. I was doing my pre-sentence report, and that's a really important thing. It follows you. It's still there. It follows mm-hmm. you forever. And they have to ask you all these questions, and I'm answering everyone truthfully. I'm not going to lie. She said, when did you have your first drink? I said, well, my father was an engineer, and I grew up in Europe, and they served champagne at the birthday parties, but I didn't like it, so I gave it to my mother. I was 5. She wrote, started drinking at 5. Mm-hmm. So that's not a lie, but it's
misleading.
And then I had just had a mastectomy in Sheriff Arpaio's care. Mm-hmm. And she said, defendant claims she has breast cancer. It's unverified. Mm-hmm. Unverified. And then defendant claims she's a college graduate. Unverified. All she had to do was pick up the phone. So
she hadn't verified it.
She hadn't verified it. It was nuanced. Mm-hmm. That what you said, subtle things that follow you forever. That will follow me forever.
Okay. We will be back, continuing this discussion on prisons in Arizona with Sue Allen Ellen and Joe Chapata when we return in the Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back, and we're discussing prisons with former prisoners Sue Allen Ellen, Joe Chapata. Joe, the problem we have in this show is that the most interesting thing comes in conversations at the break. And I always want to cut that off because it's hard to repeat yourself. But you were really fleshing out kind of what's prison life like with some examples. I wonder if you could elaborate.
Well, it's interesting. Every state's a little bit different, and we're talking about Arizona. So in Arizona, there's a segregation of the races, so to speak, which the department is trying to do away with now.
Assume that was put in because social control and you get group problems and prison just wants to keep the lid on, basically.
That's pretty much true. There's a theory among the inmate population that back many years ago in the 70s, there was so much violence being done and some very large person could brutally attack a smaller, weaker person. And so sticking together in numbers, and it evolved into something a lot uglier than that. But the way it looks in prison, if you sit in the wrong seat, there can be a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's rules. Like I was referring
not,
to.
Not real, but I mean, informal.
Yes, informal. Enforced by the population mm-hmm. itself. And some of them are really common sense based, and some of them are as ridiculous as being in an alternate, parallel, bizarro world.
Examples.
Well, if you had a friend who happened to be an African-American, you couldn't sit on his bed and talk to him mm-hmm. beside each other reading a book. And you have to understand the housing areas don't have a really great meeting room with tables and chairs and places. You're in this sardine can packed environment. So the only place to sit in most cases would be on the bunk. And mm-hmm.
You're
might
not
be
allowed
helping.
To be in the cell. In the women's.
Well, in the cell, same thing. Couldn't be in somebody mm-hmm. else's cell playing a game of chess. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you might want to help somebody that is less fortunate read something or write something or answer a question, and you have to find ways to do that. Mm-hmm. Walking too close to somebody, having a conversation with somebody else was a big no-no because they assume it's a cute little term, ear hustling. You don't want to be walking too close behind two guys on the track having a conversation. Otherwise, you're eavesdropping, and mm-hmm. that would create a violent result.
I thought they thought it was you're planning a bank robbery or something. Or
oh, sure. And a lot
of the
chow
hall. Smoking section.
Oh, yeah.
That's where you.
Sure. Well, some runs would declare we're not going to let anyone smoke in there, and some of them would smoke like chimneys. But if you asked the department, nobody smokes inside of the housing areas. There's big signs posted, but smoking goes on. It can't stop. We're the last state, I think. Mm-hmm.
They sell cigarettes and they have no smoking.
One of the most addictive substances known to man that will kill you.
They have, you can only own 10 books and 5 magazines, mm-hmm. but every week at the store, you can order seven packs of chewing tobacco, 10 packs of cigarettes already rolled, and 24 pouches of tobacco to roll your own cigarettes. Mm. So you can smoke yourself to death, but reading is not encouraged.
Mm. And you can't trade.
No, that's what they do. That's what they use the 24 pouches of tobacco for. It's trading cigarettes.
It's the currency of the realm. Yeah. But if you want to give somebody something, you could be written up for that as trading and bartering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's...
Is that enforced, my guess, selectively when they want to get you for something
sure.
else?
Yes. Sure. Yes. You know, I used to tell guys on the yard, if you want to be invisible, tuck your shirt in, wear your ID, and be where you're supposed to be on time, and you're invisible to the guards. Mm-hmm. You're invisible to the officers. But if you're running around acting like an idiot, then you're going to get treated like one. And for the most part, that's true.
Now, what about, I mean, the sense that most people have of male prisons, at least, that is that you're living in fear of physical intimidation. Is that true?
No. People set themselves up for that. Mm-hmm. If a person is being genuine, minding their own business, just trying to do their time, that's going to get noticed. Mm-hmm. Everyone is observing everyone else. Mm-hmm. It is a condensed environment. So everyone is watching everything you do, the way you may mix your coffee in the morning, what you do when you're on your way to the shower. Mm-hmm. You may not feel like you're being watched, but you're being watched, weighed, and measured at every turn because these are the people you're going to be sleeping 3.5 feet away from. And so they want – people are trying to figure that out. Bathing is a big issue. People, you would think people would want to bathe. Some of them don't. And that's something. So a lot of it's common sense. People want to make the best out of a bad situation mm-hmm. and so among themselves. And then there's rules in the prison that are supposed to regulate that as well.
And when I got out, my husband, we were co-defendants and he was still inside and we were talking on the phone. He said, "What do you feel like?" And I thought, I feel normal. For the first time in 7 years, I feel normal. I'm not gritting my teeth.
When you were still inside it?
No, I was outside.
You got out.
Free.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I was not gritting my teeth. Mm-hmm. I felt normal.
Have you seen the show Orange is the New Black?
Sure, I know Piper.
How accurate a portrayal in terms of the feel?
They've gone so far away from the book. I mean, there are things that are accurate, but it's Hollywood. You have to dramatize it.
And it's the federal system.
And it's the federal system, which is also different. But they've gone way far away from the book.
Was the book accurate?
Yes.
Okay. And in what ways have they gone away? If I've watched that and I'm trying to extrapolate from that to reality, what do I change?
Well, nudity. No, women, you're not allowed to walk around with no clothes on. You're clothed all the time.
Mm-hmm. A lot of things they get away with on the show would be locked up or moved off of the yard. That stuff wouldn't go on.
No.
You know me.
And the thing that the kitchen's always giving stuff away and they've always got a lot of stuff. No. I mean, there are people that get stuff from the kitchen, but no.
You know, I was a police officer for a year many years ago, and I look at many of the police shows, and the one I thought, with one major exception, was the most fair portrayal was Hill Street Blues. There was one exception, and they never showed this, and I know why. That you have long stretches of extremely boring time when nothing has happened. Of course, they don't show that, and it never happened between you know 10 at night and 3 in the morning when things were busy. Mm-hmm. But other than after, you know, sort of an hour after the bars closed, it got very dead for a while and there was nothing going on. And of course, that's not good television. That was the main way in which.
My friends in Vietnam said war can be very boring.
Yeah, and waiting for something to happen.
So, I think one of the things that's also true is if you want to see a trial these days, watch television. Because you can't. It's very hard to see a trial. It's very hard to go to see a trial because 95%, 93% of all cases are settled.
Yeah.
You don't go to trial.
Well, the system couldn't handle without pleas. And most people who are involved in that tell you when cases do go to trial, typically it's because the prosecutor charged something higher than the norm. And in other words, it's not so much a question of guilt as it is, but I did A, but you're charging for something way out of line with what everybody else is.
You know you're innocent and you're not going to do that. And you don't understand if you could be innocent, but you still go down. Mm-hmm. Or you may get a lot more time. You will get a lot more time than if you plea bargained. Mm. So it's
quite a lot.
It's got a lot to do with what somebody's actually indicted for and what they're accused of, because the people get caught up on semantics. I know what I did, and you're telling me I did this, and that's not what I did. It's in the same ballpark, maybe even on the same base, but it's not exactly the same thing. And people get hung up on that, and they don't want to plead to it. And the difference would be probation versus 5 years in prison, or 5 years in prison versus 35 years, which was my case. You know, I received a 35-year sentence. I had to give that back in an appeal for that same $17,000 theft case.
How did that work? If you got 35 years, you said you served 18. Was that prior to the, quote, truth in sentencing, which requires you to serve 85%? So how do we get from
35? I had to go back to court, and I had to appeal. I had several grounds for appeal, and that judge isn't even a judge anymore. We'll leave that alone. But, you know, again,
so
I take
full responsibility. So they threw out some of the conviction or something?
They reduced – the judge himself reduced those sentences.
Which is unbelievable.
But it was the same judge, and he would not let them go. He was angry about a book that I wrote while I was in the jail about identity theft. And so he was angry I wrote that book. He said it was stereo instructions on people committing crime, but it was a prevention book for people not to become victims.
It's more or less the same information, isn't it?
Exactly. So, I wasn't angry at the time. I was a little angry.
So, just in terms of sentence, how long did you get and how long did you serve?
10 years.
And how long did you serve?
Seven.
And,
a little under seven.
And what was the – what accounted for the difference? Because you said 85% rule would suggest 8.5.
No, we were on the old code.
Okay.
So it was it's the code.
Didn't come under.
No.
I mean, and if I'm correct, the new code –
85%.
You serve 85% of the state.
And the interesting thing about that was put in the 90s when the federal government was giving the states a lot of money to build new prisons.
And truth in sentencing.
Truth in sentencing and only for the violent, only for violent crimes. But Arizona did it for every crime.
Don't the wardens hate that, I would think? If they can't, they no longer have very much they can't impact your sentence, whereas if there's a lot of discretion in there, you can get good time. That is a control device.
That was a bill that House Bill, 7720?
2270.
2270 that did not get into – couldn't get through committee this year.
But it's not dead yet. You know how bills are.
About earning good
time. It is. Mm-hmm. And there's people in there trying to earn their way out.
We've got a break now. We will return. I want to turn the discussion to what you've been doing since and have you talk about current issues and your organizations and what you're doing when we return in the Think Tank in just a moment.
Okay.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, we are talking prisons in Arizona. We have with us two former prisoners. We've talked about kind of what your experience is. Tell us what you're involved with now, what you've done since. Tell me about the programs. Your floor.
Well, since 2010, I've been part of a nonprofit called Gold Canyon Heart and Home, which was created by my father and my wife while I was on the inside, and a group of 28 peer-to-peer educators, peer mentors. We would do the work and the nonprofit would support us with material support. And because the peer educator program was created by the department, we were allowed to continue on and be supported. We won a presidential
award. The department meaning the state corrections
department. Yes, the Arizona Department of Corrections. They empowered that because they saw the value both for themselves and for the population. And 128 people have been released that have been certified as peer educators over the last 3 to 7 years. With a zero recidivism rate. So when I got out a year and a half ago, I went to work for the nonprofit as a project development specialist. And I've been back to the prison to speak to the inmates against. They said, you never do that. And we did. We went there to a town hall, an Arizona town hall at Lewis, and rode the bus with the director and the assistant director. And we got to show the guys, look, you can be successful. You just have to be proactive. And that's what I do on a daily basis. I'm a mentor now on the street. I work with ex-offenders. I work with other special needs groups, senior citizens, at-risk women. You name it, we'll help you if you need help.
What are the biggest needs?
Having somebody to truly listen instead of having an organization put you in the right box or the right peg in the right hole. People need to tell their story. People need to be heard. It's like the old time doctors. Tell me where it hurts. And sometimes when you get people to get a chance to tell their story the way they want to, you're able to interject some helpful advice. And if you have a great network like we do, you can send them to someone that can help them, and it works.
And the program name again is?
A Gold Canyon Heart and Home. It's GCHH.org.
And great website.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Sue Ellen. She gave us some helpful advice. It didn't look great to start with. We did our best, though.
It's a great website.
We didn't have a millennial. Mm. We needed a millennial.
You have an old girl
you
here.
You need a teenager.
Yeah, well, now they got an old girl instead.
Sue Ellen, your activities since?
Well, I formed my second nonprofit called Reinventing Reentry. A lot of R's, a lot of E's. And we have three buckets. One is we're doing a reentry simulation around the country. It's a two-hour experience where you assume a criminal name and age and education, and this is the money you're getting out with, and this is how long the time you've served, and here are your assignments. And ordinary people go through it and say, I didn't know you had to pay your probation officer. I didn't know you had to do this. I didn't know you had to do that. So we're trying to educate and outrage the public on what happens when you get out, because you don't just get out and go back to your regular life. The other thing we're doing is we're doing advocacy nationwide. I've been fortunate enough to go both to the Obama and the Trump White House to work on prison reform, which is really quite an experience. And then the other thing is we have on our website the Fair Chance Pledge, which we are encouraging employers to sign to say that they will give second chancers a second chance. And if they sign the pledge, then they also agree to work with us on an annual basis on statistics, because we're trying to build statistics on turnover and, you know, things like that. It's really important.
Tell us about Uncheck the Box.
Well, I want to say, instead of checking the box, you need to think outside the box. And that's checking the box is crazy.
What's the box? We got to start from ground zero here.
Okay. Yes. When you apply for a job, there is a box on the application online or on paper that says, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Well, you have to check the box. You have to check yes. And if everything is online now, so if you check yes, that goes in the computer shredder. You don't even get in to do an interview. So we're trying to get rid of that. That doesn't mean as an employer you can't do a background check, because you can. But you can give my friends that have PhDs a chance to come in and say, this is what I can do for you. And this was my crime. And, you know, it was 25 years ago or something. I mean, there's a lot of information. It's not black and white. And so we're really trying to get that through. Senator Martín Quezada has a bill that has just banned the box. And he introduces it every year. And it's actually passed the Senate. So we'll see how it does in the House.
I want to say, when I looked into this, I initially had some, as an employer, I had some reservations, because I said there's a reasonable amount of stuff that you'd want to know about a candidate. And then as I read a little bit further, I realized that what this does is makes it illegal to have that as an initial screening device, so that, as you said, you know, you're sitting there with 100 applicants. You don't throw these 10 folks out from the get-go. You are still permitted to ask the question, but later on in the process, when you've gotten to know somebody, you've done some evaluation already, and I could see how that would work out very differently.
Yeah,
if it's
important.
Just a box, you check, you toss it before you even look at it.
And it's also volunteers.
If you've screened down to two or three candidates and you're interested in one, and you would find out about that along with any number of other things you've already in the course of an interview, you're now dealing with a person who you see, and you can ask for an explanation and how long was it and what was it, et cetera. It seems to me, A, that's reasonable ultimately for an employer to know. That's fair. But to keep that from occurring until later in the process seems to me to be eminently
reasonable. But wouldn't it be nice if everybody you interviewed would tell the truth and say, oh, yeah, I stole that, but I never got caught. Or, oh, yeah, I hit that car and I never got caught. Or
that's never going to happen.
Or a guy that you're dating and
well,
he dumps you.
This is like the first offender. So, you know, you're not probably not a first, if it's like a burglary. Right. You're not a first. No, you're a first time caught.
How are you? Everybody gets caught at some point, but not everybody goes to prison.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the case. And people that have been in prison are so loyal. If you talk to people who have hired second chancers, they will tell you they're the best workers we have. They're so loyal and so grateful for the opportunity. Well,
they know what they went through to get a job.
We do.
It's really something that you can tell an employer is a positive rather than a negative, and it's not spin doctoring it. Because here you have a candidate who's chomping at the bit for employment, who desperately needs it, who knows there's a probation or parole officer watching over their shoulder, a family looking at them to do something different than what got them in there, responsibilities. And there you've got the skills, but somebody who is really needs that job and wants that job. Wouldn't it be nice for them to bring out that in the interview?
In the context of an interview, that to me is an entirely different thing. It's a conversation about what your skills are, everything else about you. Why are you interested in this? How long are you liable to stay? And okay, now tell me about this. What happened and how long ago and what was involved? And how, tell me where you are now.
When I got out of prison, I was living with friends in North Scottsdale in a gated community, a different kind of gated community. And they introduced me to their friends, and I thought, what am I going to say to them? And what do you do and everything? And I just said, hi, I'm Sue Ellen Allen, and I just got out of prison.
It's a conversation starter.
It is a conversation starter, but nobody knew what to say until,
I'm sure.
And I didn't know what I wanted them to say until I got down. A homeless guy one day said, "Lady, congratulations, welcome back."
Good answer.
Yeah, and that's what you have to say.
Yeah, 15 seconds each. What is the one thing you change about the prison system?
Allow people to earn incentive their way out of there earlier if they're doing the right thing.
So, well, and you got maybe 10 seconds.
I would look at the collateral consequences that people face going to prison and getting out of prison. I would like our legislators to do that and change some of those collateral consequences.
Okay. The most interesting conversation. I thank you both, Sue Ellen Allen and Joe Chapata. You can find prior issues at ktar.com, all our podcasts, the older ones at mikeoneal.org. See you next week. And sirens call them on.